Season 2 of Love in Context podcast welcomes you. Get ready for engaging, unscripted conversations with your hosts, Ben and Spencer. Our mission remains unchanged: to explore the Bible through the powerful lens of love.
In this new season, we'll embark on a journey together, unearthing fresh insights and gaining deeper understanding of how we can love God and live out our faith in practical ways.
So let's dive into this season of Love in Context, where love and the context of the Bible intersect to transform our lives.
Welcome back to the Love in Context podcast.
Is that the name of it?
It is the name of our... Okay. Yeah, he is harassing me because literally the clip that I cut out right before this, I started saying welcome and then I forgot the name of the podcast. I created with my friend Spencer here. Mm-hmm. If you are joining us on YouTube, you may notice that Spencer has much less beard than he used to.
Yeah.
Yep. He said it was time, and then he donated all of his hair to, I think it was like people who don't have beards. They just pasted on them. Mm-hmm. That's definitely not true.
No, it's not true at all.
So we're in week two of our covenants.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're talking about the covenants, and normally these covenants are going to build on each other and kind of continue as God is moving people forward all the way up to the Messianic covenant. This one is going to be a little bit different because the Adamic and the Noahic covenant are very intrinsically connected. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways. And so one of the things I want to remind you of, if you were with us season one when we were talking about the flood, we talked about how this story of the flood is a story of like a new creation, uh-huh. right? That it mirrors the creation narrative in a lot of details yeah. in the way that it's being presented to the point where actually when they give the covenant is actually very similar. And it's very clear that in the narrative that it's meant to be like this story of new creation, mm-hmm. right? That everything got really, really bad. And that God is basically starting over, and here we go.
Yep.
Right? And if you did not listen to either of those episodes, I do recommend that you go back and check that. And then also there is an episode of the Bema podcast where they talk about the flood, and they're going to get into some more of the chiastic things that are going on inside of there.
Yep.
Yeah. So there is lots of literature, and there is lots of media that's going to be helpful for pulling apart that part.
Yeah.
So let's take a look here. So in chapter 6 of Genesis, starting in verse 18, it outlines the covenant. So initially, God comes to Noah, and in verse 18, he says this, "I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You are to bring into the ark two of the living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, and of every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to with you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it away as food for you and for them. Noah did everything just as the Lord commanded." Okay, so there's this precedent set up. God says, "I'm going to make a covenant with you. Mm-hmm. Here's what you need to do. Go into the ark when I tell you to. Take these things. And at the end, I'm going to establish my covenant to you." Mm-hmm. Right? So Noah has a portion of his covenant that he's supposed to fulfill.
Yeah.
Which is that he has to build the ark, which no small feat.
Nope.
They have that, is it in Kentucky or Kansas? They have that ark that they built.
I don't remember where it's at.
If it's even remotely accurate, the thing is massive, right? And, the ark is a massive undertaking because, luckily you don't have to actually sail anywhere in it because they're not going somewhere. They're basically just enduring the flood.
Yeah.
But they have to build this massive boat. But then not only that, they have to gather two of all of the animals around the world and put them on this ark.
Yeah.
As well as right at the end there, it said that you actually need to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it away as food for you and for them.
Yes.
Right? So there's quite a bit in this. There's quite a bit in like of activity that actually takes place in this. But this is the... This is the covenant from the very beginning. And there's going to be this onset of the covenant is this portion. And then when we actually get to the end of the flood narrative in chapter 9, God actually comes and he actually outlines the covenant with Noah. So I'm going to read this for you here. It says, "Then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, 'Be fruitful, increase in number, and fill the earth.'" Okay? Sounds a lot like Genesis 1, mm-hmm. right? "The fear and dread of you will fall on the beasts of the earth and on the birds in the sky and on every creature that moves along the ground and on all the fish in the sea. They are given into your hands." Okay, that's different, mm-hmm. right? Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you. Just as I gave you green plants, I now give you everything. Okay, so first covenant, Adamic covenant, given all the plants of the ground of the earth to eat.
Yeah.
Second one, now you have animals to eat too. And for that, we thank God because bacon is delicious, mm-hmm. right? Some of you are going to be like, well, what about, you know, prohibition against bacon? We'll get there. I'm a Gentile, so I don't have that prohibition. verse 4, but you must not eat meat that has its lifeblood still in it, and for your lifeblood I will surely demand an accounting. I will demand an accounting from every animal, and from each human being too. I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed, and for in the image of God has God made mankind. Now, once again, heralding back to this first covenant, mm-hmm. we are made in the image of God.
Yeah.
Right. So you can't go and just kill a human because you're actually killing the very image of God. You could look at it when you commit murder as you're actually striking out against God himself.
Yeah.
Right. As for you, be fruitful and increase in number, multiply on the earth and increase upon it. Then God said to Noah and his sons with him, I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you and with every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock, and all the wild animals, all those creatures that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth. I establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be destroyed by the floods or by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. Okay, so there's two different covenants here. One that's strictly for Noah's family and for humanity, and then one that's with the entire earth. Mm-hmm. Right, they're under the same covenant, but like there's pieces that apply to specific
it's
people.
It's not two different covenants. It's
correct.
Two aspects
of the same covenant.
Yes.
So sometimes when we're going to be referring back to this, you need to be specific on which part of the Noahic covenant are we talking about, mm-hmm. because this prohibition against the flooding of the earth is actually for all of creation, mm-hmm. not just for humanity. Yeah. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant I am making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring the clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember it, the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind on the earth. So God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all life on the earth. Mm-hmm. Okay. When we read this last time when we were in Torah, we talked about how it repeats itself a lot, yeah. and there's a chiasm there. Go check out that episode. Go check out the Bema episode. We're not going to get into that today.
Yeah.
But there is this idea of this covenant is he's not going to destroy the earth, that you're going to be fruitful and multiply. Same command as showing up in the Adamic covenant. Like that hasn't changed. You're still the image of God. Don't strike out against the other image, mm-hmm. right? But I'm not going to destroy everything. In fact, I'm going to give you a sign, a sign that you can actually carry with you.
Yeah.
And you can't lose, mm-hmm. because I'm literally going to put it in the clouds.
Yep.
And it's it translates as rainbow, but in the Hebrew, it's actually just bow. Mm-hmm. But we call it rainbow because that's what it is in the sky. But it's meant to represent a bow. Now, bow, typically battle. Mm-hmm. If you actually have a bow and it's curved upwards, where is it actually pointing?
Towards the heavens.
Towards the heavens, mm-hmm. yeah. So it would actually be pointing towards God. And God's saying, I'm actually going to put a bow aimed at myself mm-hmm. every time this comes that I'm going to remember.
Yeah.
I am going to be the one who remembers. Mm-hmm. Because humanity, well, people are stupid and they forget, right? Mm-hmm. A person is, like to quote from Men in Black, a person is smart, right. People are stupid.
Yep.
That's not the exact quote, but that's the idea.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So the Noahic covenant really has a few aspects that are worth touching on. One is the idea of mercy and patience,
mm-hmm.
right? Which actually echoes back to Genesis chapter 3,
right?
Where when Adam and Eve fell, mm-hmm. they were clothed.
Yeah.
Right? The Lord clothed them.
Right.
Same here, where after he fled the earth, he's like, here's a sign I'm going to create mm-hmm. to show that I'm going to be a merciful and patient God. And then you actually see that nature of God reflected throughout the rest of the Old Testament, mm-hmm. right? Where he keeps waiting for his people to return to him. And he uses that rainbow as that sign, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or that bow, mm-hmm. right? As the sign of this covenant to say, I am going to lean into who I am, a God of mercy, a God of patience,
yeah.
a God of grace, a God of love.
over the next few weeks, I really want to focus on this idea of the sign of the covenant, because this is going to be really important in this one, in the Abrahamic, the Mosaic, the Davidic, and the Messianic. These are going to be really important in the sign of the covenant, and it's going to be really important when we get to Messiah, Messianic. Messiah. That's not a word.
Nope, it is not.
I made up that word.
You did. You did. And you touched on this too, Ben, but there's a universal scope to this covenant, right?
Right.
Where the covenant is not just for Noah. It's for Noah and all his descendants, right? For everybody to come after him.
Yeah. And so, like, one of these things, this conversation comes in where people talk about universal morality, right? Yeah. C.S. Lewis is well known for talking about this, that if you step outside of the rules, there has to be a rule giver.
Yeah.
Right? Why is it not acceptable anywhere in the world to commit murder?
Yeah.
Because there's a foundational covenant with the entire world, right? That when you take blood in the image of God, that there is recompense.
Yeah.
Right? The idea, though, is that there is some sort of, like, moral law that is exists outside of humanity. It's this covenant with God that, and there's a few things that go with that, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes, because Jewish thought has some thoughts on that. But there's this moral law outside of humanity that actually says these are things that aren't okay.
Yeah.
And it's no coincidence that we keep coming back to those same fundamental truths, right?
Well, when Paul talks about the fruit of the Spirit, right? At the end of it, he says, against these things, there is no law.
Yeah.
Right? He's actually referring to that.
Yeah.
Referring back into that.
That there is a natural way that we are supposed to live. Of course, now, of course, we have, outside of Christ, we have a fallen world and things that are going to tend towards destruction.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the story that comes before the flood, is that every inclination of humankind was to evil all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of my, least favorite and also favorite verses, because, like, that's terrible, but also, like, there's no ambiguity there. All of the thoughts of humanity were evil all of the time. You know, it's not like these were kind of bad people. No, every thought was evil all the time. So you're talking about, like, this whole idea of, like, divine mercy and compassion, and but there's also, like, the Adamic covenant, there's this portion of human responsibility, right? Like, there is a job to do. It doesn't seem like the covenant is conditional upon them doing it, but it is a job that they're giving as part of the covenant. Like, what I mean is that God is not going to not destroy the world if they don't do their job. Like, he's made the covenant on his terms. Like, he's going to fulfill this. But so, inside of that, there is this commission to be fruitful, multiply, and actually rule the earth.
Well, example, like, good parents are going to be good parents whether the kids are obeying or disobeying.
Hopefully.
I said good parents going to be good parents whether their kids are obeying or disobeying, right?
Yeah.
Like, we have a covenant as parents to be like, we are going to raise our kids to the best of our ability, right? We're going to raise them up in the way of the Lord. They are given a moral responsibility. Right. But it's not conditional upon God fulfilling his side of the covenant.
Right.
Right. Like, God's not going to abandon his side of the covenant because they failed their moral responsibility, which, by the way, Noah does at the end of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. There, hopefully I'm not spoiling anything. You've read the book before, but there is, in the next couple of chapters, Noah kind of, fails on that aspect of walking forward with that. But there's going to be also this trend moving forward that God is going to fulfill his end of the covenant no matter what. Whenever God makes covenants, he's going to make sure that his side is taken care of. Which is really key because, as we're going to find out, and we've talked about in the past, God typically will actually find a way to fulfill both sides of the covenant.
Yes.
Like a good parent, he's like, hey, I bet you they're not going to do great at this.
Yeah, right. 100%.
And then once again, the sign of the covenant is a big deal to pick away from this, is that this is the first one that a sign is given, right? And the sign of something that you can't lose.
One of the just interesting things, like whether this has weight or no weight at all, is there actually was more dietary permission and prohibition given in this one. Where instead of you hinted at it earlier, but instead of just plants, like, oh, here's everything.
And here's everything, but here's also you can't take something with the lifeblood in it.
Yeah.
Right? Which we're going to talk about in a minute because that actually coincides with some ways that the Jews have interpreted that over the years.
Yeah.
Right? Some older sage wisdom is what I'm going to call it. Right? But it's no longer just every good plant, don't eat this.
Yeah.
Now it's like, okay, well, you have the plants and you also have the animals.
Yeah.
But there's also a certain amount of responsibility because... now you have animals. Like, if you kill all the animals, then you won't have that animal anymore, mm-hmm. right? If you don't plant and you just keep reaping, then you're never going to actually have things that grow.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of like the start of, like, now there's actually additional responsibilities. Like, when you have, you're entrusted with more options, there's now more responsibility put on your shoulders to actually, how are you going to steward that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So in this covenant, though, one of the things that I absolutely love about a lot of these covenants is that there are no strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, we're given moral responsibility, but as far as God fulfilling his side of it, there's no strings attached.
Right.
He's going to fulfill his side of it. Spoiler alert, read through the Bible. You will find that true in the Messianic covenant as well. Mm-hmm. He is going to fulfill his covenant.
Yeah, because you don't see Noah going, hey, God, can you, on your side of the covenant, make sure that you don't destroy the world with water again? Because building this ark was real hard.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's not something that comes up.
No.
The only exception is where I think where somebody's going to have a question about that is actually going to be in the Abrahamic, which comes up next.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to talk about that till next week, but in this one, Noah doesn't ask for a sign of the covenant. He doesn't ask God to put the conditions. It's something that God does proactively
mm-hmm.
in Noah's favor and humanity's favor.
Yeah, yeah, and so those are, to me, those are the big things in the covenant.
Well, and we talked about. I think one of the things that we maybe misunderstand because we're not Jewish and we're, you know, in Southeast Alaska, like, we're used to being around water all the time.
Yeah.
And so we don't necessarily think of it as chaos, even though water is fairly chaotic,
mm-hmm.
but we don't think of it as a, like a, like in the deep or evil or anything like that. But that's not necessarily going to be true in, Middle Eastern culture in that time. Because they looked at, like, the water as a place that you go, the shale is underneath the water, that you have, like, the water, and then you have the firmament, and you have, like, you know, like, it's underneath. And maybe I'll put a picture in the show notes, but it's this, like, biblical view is that, you know, the water was deep chaos.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, it's not just that God's promising not to flood the earth again. He says, I'm never going to plunge you back into chaos.
Mm-hmm.
That's not why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I'm not here to plunge you into chaos. So water, yes, is water, but water is also a metaphor for chaos. And, like, God is not bringing chaos back into this world. And any time that the rain falls and you might think that the world's coming to chaos,
mm-hmm.
God's like, no, look at my covenant and remember that I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, that is a profound truth that we're going to see in each of the covenants,
mm-hmm.
is that God is saying, like, we're not leaning towards chaos. We're moving towards shalom,
mm-hmm.
which is what we had in the garden and was broken.
Yeah.
But it's what we want again.
Yeah.
Right? So one of the things I find pretty interesting here is in this text in chapter 9, so I went and was taking a look at basic moral laws that the Jews came up with from the Noahic covenant,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's seven Noahide laws, is what they call them. The first is prohibition of idolatry, that you're not supposed to worship idols or engage in idolatry, recognizing the one true God. This is very apparent by you are made in the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
Image being the word that we get idol from.
Yep.
Right? You are a representation of God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It makes sense that they would, that's the takeaway they have. There's this prohibition against murder. Once again, somebody made in the image of God, you don't strike out against God.
Yep.
There's prohibition against theft, stealing, or taking what does not belong to oneself. Prohibition against sexual immorality. Prohibition against of blasphemy. And prohibition of eating flesh taken from a living animal. This is where we were talking about you can't eat meat that has its lifeblood in it. In other words, you don't eat an animal while it's still alive.
Yeah.
You slay the animal, you drain the blood, and you eat the animal.
Yeah.
Right? Establishment of courts of justice. This is once again that blood for blood.
Yep.
And universal morality. We talked about that with this foundation of God's intentions for humanity. And it became this foundation for civilization for them moving forward. This idea of there's some sort of universal code that we're supposed to live by.
Yeah.
Right. And really impacted the way that they started to interact with the world around them. And whenever they veered from that, it ended badly for them.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever they really lived into that, there was a blessing.
Yeah.
Just like most covenants, there's blessings and there's curses.
Yep.
I think sometimes when we hear that, we hear, oh, if you do what the covenant says, God's going to bless you. And if you don't do it, he's going to curse you. But the reality is there's a certain way that the world is meant to work. According to, because God built it.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a certain way that life is supposed to be. And when you live into the way that life is supposed to be, the natural result is blessing.
Because
that's the way the world is supposed to work.
Yeah.
because you're living into God's design under God's creation in the world that he put together. But when you live outside of that, curses are the natural production of living outside of the way that God called the world to be. Mm-hmm. It's not that he's bringing curses into your life. He's saying, if you do these things, this is what happens. It's like if you tell your kid, if you play with that knife and swing it around, eventually you're going to cut yourself. And then they swing it around and then they cut themselves. I didn't cause them to cut themselves because I told them about the consequences of swinging a knife. Uh-huh. Right?
By the way, we don't parent that way.
Yeah, we don't parent that way.
Clarification.
Yeah. If you have a stick of TNT, no. But you know what I mean? And so I think a lot of the times when we hear these blessings and curses, we're like, oh, God's just waiting for me to break the law so that he can lay the smackdown on me. But that's not really what's going on at all.
No.
What God is saying is, if you choose to live here, like, I made this world. This is how it's meant to operate. If you operate outside of that, you're going to find brokenness and curses. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite examples of this is, and this is going to get real nerdy for people who don't like computers, but computers have a certain design to them. And they're meant to operate within certain parameters. Mm-hmm. And when you operate outside of those parameters, you get corruption. Uh-huh. And corruption typically spreads to the point that it can actually lock up your entire computer.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Because you're operating outside of the parameters, and it can start small, but it grows over time, and that corruption spreads.
Yep.
To the point where eventually you have to have a, you have to reformat and reset to the default setting on your computer. Or you might burn your hard drive, like the demo possible.
Or you just got to get a new computer. Like, throw out the old, get a new.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, take out your heart of stone and get a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, like, this idea, nobody would look at a computer and be like, oh, well, the computer is bringing curses on me for doing... No, you're using it incorrectly.
Yeah.
Not in the way that it's designed to be. And then it's not working. Like, you should not... If you use it in an unconventional way, don't be surprised if it breaks. Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, life hacks, like when people do life hacks, sometimes they use things in unconventional ways and then it blows up in like fantastical and often amusing ways.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it works, though.
Sometimes it does work.
Like I saw an Instagram reel earlier this morning where it was a guy, he took a mop head and he attached it to the end of a weed eater.
Perfect.
And mopped the kitchen floor with it. And I was like, I don't know if this is like stupid or brilliant, right?
It's
like,
somewhere in there,
right?
Yeah.
Granted, it was a gas-powered weed eater that he was running in his kitchen, so that was probably stupid. But
yeah, probably didn't smell great.
But I was like, man, if that was just a battery-powered weed eater, that'd be like perfect.
Well, and can you imagine though that if he did that and then he tried to sue the manufacturer of the weed eater, who's like, now my house smells like gas. They're like, it's not meant to be run indoors.
Yeah,
you know. And like, you're getting mad at the designer for when you took the product and you used it incorrectly, that it didn't work the way it was supposed to.
Yeah.
I was like, well, you didn't use it the way you're supposed to.
Yep. Yeah.
And a lot of like with this foundational covenant is God saying, hey, there's a way that the world works.
Uh-huh.
Right. And in the Adamic covenant, the way the world worked, you're supposed to subdue the earth, fill it, be fruitful, and multiply.
Yeah.
Right. And don't eat from this tree. Like, mm-hmm. those are the things. That's how the world worked. Mm-hmm. And spend your time with God, live in day seven, go and make the whole earth look like the Garden of Eden,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that was it.
Yeah.
In the time of Noah, he's saying, hey, there's a little bit different. You're still going to be fruitful and multiply. You're still going to, but now everything's going to be fair game for you as you go out there for eating.
Yeah.
But you need to be really careful not to, like, strike down somebody who's made in the image of God.
Yeah.
Because that's a strike against me. There's a way that the world's meant to be, and there's these ideas that they come away with, like these general, like universal truths that you're going to walk with. And when you walk outside of those, not surprisingly, yes, you're going to have curses, but you're really just taking the natural consequences of doing what you're not supposed to do in a world that was created for a specific purpose.
Yeah, so kind of hit the bullet points of the covenant here. One is there's the element of mercy and patience. We talked about that, right? God saying he's going to be merciful and patient with his creation.
Yeah.
Right. There's no strings attached to God fulfilling it.
Correct.
Or God fulfilling his side of the covenant, right? Mm-hmm. He is going to fulfill his side of the covenant, whether we live into our side or not. He's still going to fulfill his side of the covenant. One of the other ones is that, well, obviously the rainbow. We've got to talk about the rainbow.
Yeah.
I can't believe I almost skipped over that. But the rainbow.
Trying to skip it.
No, I wasn't trying to skip
it. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, the rainbow. There's a universal scope. It's meant for everyone.
Yeah.
right? This isn't meant just for Noah. It's not meant just for Jewish people. It's meant for the whole world.
Correct.
Right? Like, it is meant for everyone. And lastly, there's moral responsibility,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, there are things that we are responsible for. We have been given responsibility, charged to care for the earth, charged to steward it well, right? And so when you look at the covenants, most of this lies on God fulfilling yeah. his side, right?
Yeah.
And then all God's asking is like, hey, take care of what I've blessed you with.
Well, and because this came out on the heels of the flood, there's this theme that's going to connect and continue on.
Yeah.
And Sandra Richter is going to talk about this in her book, Epic of Eden. And we're going to plug mm-hmm. that again. Also, Peter Gentry's Covenants, Kingdom Covenant, I believe it's called. Every time I go to say it, I always forget what the book is called.
Yeah.
Kingdom of Covenants, Peter Gentry. But in Richter, what she's going to talk about is that in the middle of the chaos, God is always focusing on the hope.
Yeah.
And you're seeing the mercy. In like even with judgment, you see mercy. It's always yeah. God is always trending towards wanting to forgive and include and bring in and make a part of his family. And she's going to connect that Noahic covenant, what happens here, to later covenants, particularly the theme of judgment and grace.
Yeah.
Right? Like judgment is coming, but God wants to give grace.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Jenry is going to place it in the talk about more about how it fits in the Near East. Once again, I want to stress that if you are not a details person, Gentry's is probably going to be a little heavy for you, mm-hmm. right? And he talks about how that the new covenant is the beginning for humanity, emphasizing the fresh start and God offers after judgment. Similar ideas.
Yeah.
But he's going to be much more talking about the Noahic covenant, laying the groundwork for the Abrahamic covenant.
Yep.
And he's going to talk about how they are progressively revelation of God's plan for humanity.
Yeah.
Both of those are great ways to view it.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think that they contradict each other. They're just two different scholars' ways of looking at the same events.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a really good marriage between those two ideas.
Yeah.
But understanding like the Adamic and Noahic, I really want to marry those two ideas because they're really in the first six, seven chapters of the Bible that God is, he's saying, you're here for a purpose. Mm-hmm. You have a job. I'm going to do my part. Don't worry about that. I'm going to make sure that chaos doesn't continually happen around you. And that if you live into what I'm calling you to do, you're going to find blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And, but you do have a job and we need to get about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're made in the image of God. Go represent me in the world.
Yep.
Right? If you have questions or thoughts or, any of those things, send us an email at loveincontext@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. You can also comment on our social media pages. If you're seeing this on YouTube, just write a comment underneath. We'll probably try to address those. We do record a couple of weeks in advance, so you may recognize that we don't answer a question for like 4 weeks.
Yeah.
That's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. Because Spencer has pity on me. He doesn't make me record and edit and post in the same week because that would be a lot.
Yeah.
But we actually do want to hear what you guys have to say. The covenants are really important to understand, and the Noahic covenant is going to have a connection when we get to the book of Acts too. It's going to come back and talk about Noahic and Abrahamic covenant in this conversation with the first council of the disciples.
Yeah. Well, until next time.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope you enjoyed this engaging conversation and gained valuable insights into the powerful message of love within the Bible.
We'd love to hear from you and continue the conversation. Connect with us by sending us your questions, thoughts, and suggestions to loveincontext@gmail.com. We greatly appreciate your feedback and ideas for future episodes.
Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Don't forget to hit that follow button to stay up to date with the latest episodes and join our growing community.
Thank you for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in the context of today's world.